Hello and welcome to the Principal Liner Notes podcast. This is Sean Gaylord coming to you with another connected conversation. And I can tell you are going to get your money's worth with both of those words with my guest today. Coach Jim Johnson is definitely somebody who is connected, and he is also someone that values kind of the art of conversation and getting to know folks, and really is impeccable with his words, and he's got a wonderful leadership journey. He is also the author of a book and a story that you may have heard of, entitled "A Coach and a Miracle: Life Lessons from a Man Who Believed in an Autistic Boy." And he will be telling a little bit about this book and about the powerful and inspiring story that is embedded within this book. Jim, welcome to the podcast. It's great to have you here, my friend.
Thanks, Sean. I'm really looking forward to it.
In a way, I'm kind of fanboying a little bit because I remember seeing kind of a little bit of your, if you will, 15 minutes on the national news several years ago. But I'd love for you to kind of maybe share a little bit about that story for those who are looking at the podcast and going, "I know that guy. He looks familiar. I've seen him someplace." So maybe for folks that are listening in and tuning in, a little bit of context in terms of why your story went national and went viral.
Give you just quick context for your audience is that I was a longtime high school basketball coach. In my last 20 years, I coached at one of the schools in my hometown called Greece, a suburb of Rochester, New York, called Greece Athena. And this young man came into our program. He tried out for our JVs. He was very small in stature, like 5'6", 90 pounds as a sophomore. And my JV coach came to me and said, "Coach, this young man is not very skilled. He's got a lot of challenges. He's very small. He also is on the autism spectrum. He's learning disabled, but he's got this big heart. He's so much passion for basketball, and he's such a we over me guy. Those are some of the things you always talk about, people we want in our program." And he said, "I'd like to keep in the program." And I said, "Well, what do you got in mind?" He says, "I'm going to offer him the team manager's job." And his name was Jason McElwain. I actually tagged the nickname J-Mac because I couldn't pronounce his last name. Unfortunately, he liked it. But Jason, where I started to get to know him, because he was sitting on the bench for the JV game and the varsity game, we usually would follow right after that, and he'd sit on the bench for the varsity game. And it was really cool to start to get to know him. But where I really got to know him is after the JV season, his season, he came to all our off-season workouts, and he wanted to make the varsity as a junior. And he did grow a little bit. He was up to about 5'8", 110 pounds as a junior. He still wasn't good enough to make our team, but I offered him the team manager's job. And I love sharing this quick story, Sean. So at that point, to give context to your audience, I had been a fairly successful coach from a win-loss. We had a lot of winning seasons, but I was kind of known as the guy that couldn't win the big one. We were we would lo go in our postseason tournament and continue to lose. In fact, I had taken five teams going into Jason's junior year to the semifinals, but losing every one of them. And so at the first team meeting, Jason served as our team manager. He embraces the role. And I walk in the room to address the team, and he immediately raises his hand. He says, "Coach, I know you've never won the Section 5 championship, but," and I said, "Well, thanks, Jay, for the reminder." And I said, "But this is going to be different this year." And he said, "We're going to establish this mantra, stay focused, and we're going to help you win your first Section 5 championship." But Sean, we have another good season, winning record, get to the semifinals now for the sixth time, and we lose at the buzzer to our crosstown rival. And I'm devastated. I lose my mind at home. I told my wife I don't think I'm the right person. And my wife was very wise, and she reminded me, "Oh, Jim, you always talk about your mission is bigger than winning championships, and you can make an impact on these young people." And it was a very bright wisdom, because at that point, I was totally disappointed. But Jason inspired me because he came back as senior. And Sean, in my 30 years as head coach, I never had a kid try out 3 straight years if he didn't make the team. But he just kept pushing. And so his senior, he comes out, and I brought him in the office and said, "Jason, I got some good news and some bad news." He says, "Well, give me the bad news first." And I said, "Well, unfortunately, you're not still good enough to make the team." And You could see he was really upset. But I said, my good news is for senior night, I'm going to give you a uniform and hopefully get you in the game. And I kid people that periodically he would ask me about that uniform. And of course, I define periodically as about every other day. He was pretty pumped out. Well, the book, just to give you a quick insight, is it does delve into our his senior season. We're expected to have a very good team, and we won our first two games, and then adversity struck. It's too long of a story for the podcast, but I go through it in the book and the life lessons I learned. But the bottom line, we fortunately got things turned around because I became a much better listener, and kind of the turning part was a shoot around we did at a Christmas tournament between games, where I didn't bring any basketballs out. I just simply sat there. I talked to him a little bit about the inspiration Jason is, but I said, I don't have the answers right now, but if we don't decide to unite this team, the team we play tonight, we're gonna lose by 50 points. And what I did, and it really helped me because I became a much better leader that day and that forward, is I said to him, I don't have the answers, but you do. And they finally started to open up. And they by the end of that meeting, we had never brought a basketball out yet. You could see a better bounce in their step. And the team we played that night, we didn't win the game, but we lost in overtime. And it really went to see what we could do if we united. And there we got some momentum. We won eight of our next nine games going into senior night. And senior night is always a very touching night. It's where we honor our senior players, bring their parents and guardians. But it was profoundly touching to me, Sean, to see Jason embrace his parents in number 52 that was way too big, but he didn't care. In fact, there was a rumor going around school that when he gave it the uniform to him, that he slept in it for two straight nights. Anyways, so we'll cut to the chase because so I got everybody in the game after three quarters. And my goal was I wanted to get Jason with enough time so he could score a basket. So I got him in with just over 4 minutes to go. The place erupted. And what I didn't know, what Jason didn't know, one of our parents made these placards, these pictures of Jason's face you can see on the video that went viral. And when Jason entered the game for the first time, I got so overwhelmed with emotion. I sat down, which I really did, and I started crying. I couldn't believe how much the student body greeted him. First time he gets the ball in the game, Sean, he's got a three-pointer from the right corner. The whole crowd stands. He lets it go. It misses by like 6 feet. And, I know a lot of educators listen. I'm in a public school education. I know you're not supposed to pray in the public schools, but I was praying, dear God, please help him get one basket. Next possession, he has a much shorter shot from about 10 feet. And this time it hits the rim. And I'm thinking to myself, all right, God's starting to listen. We're getting closer. And then the third possession, he shoots another three, and this time magic. It goes in, the place explodes. And I'm thinking, God must be a basketball fan. Not only has he scored a basket, he's got a three. It can't be better than this. Well, I'm going to finish the story very quickly, but I'll say 6 months after that game, Jason's at the ESPY Awards. He's up for the greatest sports moment of the year, and his idol was the late, great Kobe Bryant. And Kobe was up for the same award. He had scored 81 points for the Lakers that year. He meets his idol, and then he beats him out for the ESPY. Well, how does he do that? Well, after he makes that first three, he comes down and makes another three. Then he makes a couple. He misses a couple. The place is just going bananas. And the two things I'll never forget, with about a minute to go, I'm sitting on the bench, tears still flowing down my face. I cannot believe what I'm seeing. And I get a tap on my shoulder. I'm shocked. I look behind me. It's J-Mac's mother. And she's bawling her eyes out, Sean, and she whispers in my ear, "Coach, this is the best gift you could have ever given my son." And I was so touched, I cried harder. Then how the game ends, Spencer Port, our opponent that night, I want to give kudos to their team and their coach. They score with about 10 seconds to go. And the player that takes the ball out of bounds for us normally throws it to our point guard, but this time he throws it to J-Mac. So J-Mac's dribbling down, and I look up, and I think there's like 6 seconds left. I thought they were just going to let him in and go in and make a layup. Oh, no, he pulls up like 2 feet behind the arc, almost an NBA three. I'm thinking, Jason, don't shoot from there. You're going to ruin the moment. He watches this rainbow swish. I look over and it was like Rudy. The whole gym ran on the floor. Jason's teammates put him up on their shoulders. And then I come out. At that point, I had no idea how many points he had scored. And our public address announcer comes on and says, "Our leading scorer tonight for the Trojans, J-Mac with 20 points,
Hmm.
including 6 3-pointers. He was our leading scorer for the game in 4 minutes. And I'll say, I mean, there's a lot of ways we can go. I'll say one thing that was really cool was, we had had a lot of division that year. And so, getting the team back united. But one of the best things, you talk about the essence of teamwork, Sean, and how the leaders shine the light on others, is the fact that in those last 4 minutes, the four players that were on the floor with Jason, out of their own hearts, I never asked them to do this, they passed the ball to him every single possession. And in fact, I still kid Jason. I still see him all the time. Jason, I'm still looking for your first assist. You didn't pass the ball once. But it was a certainly memorable night. And then I'll just close this story by saying, Sean, you won't believe this, 3.5 weeks, and we got all kinds of media attention and exploded around the world. 3.5 weeks later, in front of our downtown arena that seats 10,000, we had a sellout crowd, which is very rare in our area, and we won our first Section 5 championship. So it was pretty cool.
I love hearing you share this story, and I've seen interviews and I've read the book, and it's still, it's a transformative story. And one of the things that I greatly appreciate in the story, there's so many layers to this, man. But I think the fact that as leaders, we hit our valleys, right? And we hit those kind of dark nights of the soul because, leadership is lonely. And particularly, and not to say that anything's greater or better, but in your case, as a basketball coach, you are under about 15 million microscopes. And everybody's got a different angle, a different take, but what I also appreciate is that you're there on the sideline, you're there in the moment. But in the story, Jim, you mentioned how your wife, when you hit that kind of, valley, gave you a reminder of your purpose, of your vision, of your core. Like, hey, it's not about winning games, it's about having an impact on those kids. For that leader who may not have the wisdom of your wife, or the wisdom of a mentor or a coach, what would you recommend, to that leader when they hit that moment, when they're pulling their hair out and going, oh my God, what have I done? This isn't working. And they just don't know who to turn to or where to go. And again, my wife is my best advisor as well. And it sounds like yours is as well, just gets right to the heart of it, and then, okay, bam, we're back in it. But what advice would you give to that leader when they hit that valley, such as you did?
It's a great question. Ironically, as we were doing this interview, I just spoke recently in your state, North Carolina. And in my presentations, I do a couple different ones. I do one on making your dreams come true. I do another one on leadership, another one on team culture. But one of the things I always talk to people about is the first person you got to lead is yourself. And I think we often forget that. And I really encourage people to get clarity of who they are, what they stand for. I talk about having a personal mission statement, which is something I didn't really have any idea when I was younger until I read Dr. Covey's 7 Habits, and he talked a lot about it. And I was like, oh, this is probably something I should try to figure out. And, I give people some steps on how I think they can discover their mission. But I think, like anything in life, you got to have a basic foundation. And if you don't have something that you really believe in and it's bigger than you, and I think that's really important in having a mission statement is, as my wife reminded, and you've just talked about the wisdom of your wife, that, because as a basketball coach, winning games was important. Just like if you're running a business, you got to make a profit. But I think the people that sustain success, because I was fortunate after winning that first championship, we made the finals 8 times in my last 11 years. So that kind of opened up. And so one of the things I talked about leaders is really having that foundation of who you are, what you're going to stand for, what are your core values? Like, for example, my mission statement is to be an outstanding role model that makes a positive difference in the world by helping others make their dreams come true. And so I'm very clear on that. And I'm trying to live that up to that every day. Now, there's certainly days I don't make it. And my wife had to remind me very strongly that one night. But I think that's really the thing. And then the other thing that I think, if you're going to sustain greatness, whether it's running a school, a business, or coaching a basketball team, is that you have to continue to grow as a leader. And then I think the ultimate is as a leader, when you develop the leaders that, in your school or on your team, so they become people that can lead themselves and then influence others in a positive way.
Well, it also speaks to the fact that, you in that time created the variables and created the scene so that the players could thrive and rise to another a different kind of occasion besides point scoring and assist. And the fact that, this is the senior game. This is for
Right.
many of these players, this is it.
Yeah.
And you've got families there, and it's kind of the pinnacle moment. And the fact that they, and I don't know how, if all four of those starters were seniors or not. I'm going to assume that some of them were, but the fact that they had the humility to pass the ball to J-Mac, I think speaks to your leadership and the culture that you were designing, because those players could have easily s said, you know what, I'm never going to see you again, Coach Jim. I'm my mom, is up in the stands or what have you. I'm going for every 3 point. I'm not assisting Jack, much less J-Mac. I think that does speak to the culture. And one of the things that you talk about and you mention in the book is that, part of the mantle that we carry as a leader is to kind of help form that culture that I guess aligns with your vision, so that senior game, you got four players that truly demonstrate leadership and demonstrate a high level of humility and human centeredness and compassion. So kind of what would be your words of wisdom on culture forming? And I say this in the context of when a lot of folks listen to this episode, it's back to school, for principals and superintendents and that kind of first day. When you're with your staff or your team is kind of a make or break day, and to me the default is culture. So what would be kind of ideas and wisdom that you have there?
Well, I think you definitely have to develop, a school mission and something. But as the leader, you've got to live it. I call it the leader being the CRO, the chief reminding officer. So you've got to live it and share it and teach it consistently. So I think that's number one. And consistent is huge because building culture takes time and it's a daily process. And you have to really help define what are the behaviors. You first, as the leader, you have to model those behaviors. Like, if you expect everybody to treat everybody in respect, yet you lose control all the time and you're yelling and screaming, that those don't align very well. So I think that's hugely important in having a consistency and build that culture. And the other thing that I really challenge leaders, Sean, that I think is really important, because I often ask on my keynotes, is how many believe that in building a great culture, you need to build trust? And you know what? I've spoke to a lot of audiences and they all are 100%. Trust is important. But then I kind of shock them because I said, how many do you have an intentional trust plan on how you're going to build trust with your group? And I give them a 3-point plan that we do that we, when we took over, because we took over four basketball programs. The first one was a disaster. I went lasted 1 year and got fired. We won one game.
Oh,
And then
man.
the other three, we were fortunate that we were able to turn them all around and ended up having, quite a bit of success. So, but I think, and the other thing, I just give you an example. Like, our mission was to build, to create winners on and off the court. And again, going back to my famous chief reminding officer, I had to share with them consistently and model what does it take to win on the court. Winning the game's part of it, but you got to be a great sport, a great teammate. Those are the things we were trying to stress every day. And off the court, being the best student you could be, being someone that's really going to contribute to our community. Because I always used to tell our players, and it started with me, you are always on stage, whether you think it or not, and people are watching you. And if those behaviors are not consistent of the culture, then that's usually when the culture is demised. Because Sean, you've been around leadership and education for a long time, and you've seen some people that come in as a leader, and all of a sudden things really start to go well. And you know that they have some real ideas and they're modeling the right behaviors to build that culture. I've also seen a number of times, I'm sure you have too, where they change leadership and boy, the boat starts to sink. And I think that's the same thing. So remember, as a leader, you do influence with your words and your actions, and if you're not aligning those can really hurt you in building culture.
Thank you, Jim. And I know, you've alluded to some of them, in a roundabout way, but I know that in addition to, some of the things that you provide, consulting for and you keynote for, one of the centerpieces of your work, in terms of leadership coaching and leadership development are these keys to success. And if you could, for those who may not be familiar, and a couple of you touched on like mission, which is number two on the list. If you can kind of walk us through those keys to success as a leader, that I think that would be great for those that are.
Yes, sure. And there is some overlap because the book I sent you was based on my first keynote, which is Dreams Really Do Come True, which mission is two. In my leadership keynote, I talk about seven keys. So I'll just run through them quickly. And then if we want to dive into one other, we can. But number one is clarifying your vision. And I really talk about building your own or creating your own personal mission statement, having a team or organization mission statement that are aligned and everybody's clear about it. It's not just up on the wall. People are living it with the appropriate behaviors. Number two is building trust, which you just talked about. Number three is creating an edge. I think as a leader, you're always trying to find ways to create an edge. Example we use is we did spend a lot of time with team and individual goal setting. I think that's really important. There are other things constantly. I think as a leader, again, going to grow, you're trying to find ways you can create an edge for your team organization. Number four is effective communication. And that's the old adage, you have two ears and one mouth, which I didn't understand very well early in my career. Got way better, and I think that helped me as a leader, and the fact that you got to listen twice as much as you're talking, you got to ask more questions instead of giving more statements. Number five is lead by example, which we've talked about. You're always on stage. Number six is called my leadership philosophy, which is leaving a profit. And then number seven is what I think has gotten bigger and bigger. And I often define it so that people are clearly understand because a lot of people heard it, but they don't really understand it. And that is servant leadership. So those are the seven keys I talk about.
That's beautiful. And I'll definitely, for those that are tuning in, I will be sure to put all of Jim's social media and website and all those links in the show notes so that you can make reference to that. So Jim, we're getting ready to, I'm going to use a basketball analogy here, man. We're it's we're getting down to the whistle blowing. We're getting down to the first jump ball. And we are in your huddle, and we meaning leaders that are getting ready to kick off the year. Whether we're kind of an old veteran like me, whether we've got some folks on the bench that are new, and what's ahead of us. You're an educator. You've been in public school. You know what's ahead of us. It's a new school year, so. What's the play, coach? Give us the play. What how do we run the play, man? Do I hit the boards? What's that play? What's that leadership play for us going into the school year, man?
Well, I think, because that's a great question that I would answer probably a little bit differently depending on where I am. So if I'm someone that that, has been leading the program for a while or this school, then, they're starting to get to know me. But if I want to make some kind of change, I got to be real clear of why the change and that I've listened to people. And the other thing is, like, when the last program I took over that we had a lot of success for 20 years, the first thing I did in leadership is I met with every basketball player in the program, and we had one-on-ones, and I was getting to know them. And I think that is so essential. Before you come in, I think you got to have some ideas of the direction you want to take a school or, a team or whatever it happens to be. But you really got to get to know your people because you need buy-in. You can stand up there and talk about, where we're going to go, but if you have no buy-in, it's going to be a struggle for you. So I think that's really important that, and I know you know this, Sean, but how important is a leader that you get out of your office, you meet your students, you meet your staff, you get to know them. A kid, we have one principal at one of the middle schools I taught at many years ago, and he was a great guy. But you talk about never getting out of his office. He came down to the gym. I was a phys ed teacher, and I said to him, "Dan, are you okay?" And he said, "What do you mean?" I said, "I don't see you much." So, but he was a great guy. He just, and, but I think that's something, the fa famous managing by wandering around. And I think that's so essential because when you share, going back to effective communication, that, you got to be clear with your words and aligning with your behaviors, but you also got to be clear that are people all on board? Like I've spoke to a lot of schools. I also spoke to a lot of businesses, and I'll sometimes kid people. I'll ask one of the vice presidents of a business, "So tell me about your mission." And they'll look around for the mission statement. They don't really know it. And same with the school. If whatever your mission, which I got things got to be bigger than just, winning games or making a profit, but it's got to be something that you believe in and all your people believe in and you share consistently by both your words and actions.
Right on. That's great advice and great wisdom as the buzzer sounds. Jim, how can folks get a hold of you? What's the best way? I know that you are highly networked and you value that network. So how can folks connect with you or order your book or follow you on social media?
Yeah, so as we talk right now, so it's coachjimjohnson.com, and that will stay the same on that. I have a free monthly newsletter and a weekly free blog that people can sign up. I do have a YouTube channel. I'm on the only one I'm not on Facebook. Unfortunately, got hacked, so I got to rebuild that one. But I am on LinkedIn is where I spend my most time. I do a lot of posting on there and connecting with people. I also am on Twitter or X, and I'm also on Instagram, although I don't spend a lot of time on Instagram. I know a lot of people do. But what I really try to give back, and share ideas to help people. I'm at the part of my life right now that I just want to make as much impact in helping others.
And folks that are tuning in, when Jim says that, he means that. He really walks that talk. And when you reach out to him, the generosity and the communication all come from a great place. Again, Jim, thank you so much for being on the podcast, pal. I will crash boards for you any day of the week, man. Coming from a former basketball center, I will crash those boards for you, man, anytime, man. I don't know about the three pointers, but if you want, I will do it, or I'll make sure that assist goes where it needs to go. The name of the book is A Coach and a Miracle: Life Lessons from a Man Who Believed in an Autistic Boy. My guest has been Coach Jim Johnson. Please be sure to reach out to Jim. And I would also say that my sign-off kind of echoes a little bit of Jim's work with dreams, because I'm one that believes in dreams. So as I typically sign off on the podcast, don't forget to share with the world your dreams, your ideas, your words, and your hopes, because they help make the world a better place just like Jim, and the world needs you. This is Sean Gaylord with Jim Johnson. This is the Principal Liner Notes podcast. Thanks again for tuning in. Hope to catch you on the flip side.